Here we go. First question. Albert, what inspired you to make a documentary about boredom?
You know, my pattern is to make films that are about very obvious subjects that you might say are hiding in plain sight, stupidity and laughter. And I think what really actually got me going indirectly was that boredom, like stupidity, is hiding in plain sight. It's all around us. We all deal with it. But I was shocked to discover that it had never been formally investigated in a feature documentary. So that was the initial step. The reason I was looking into it was I was doing a series for a newspaper on the science of fun. And I was struck by the fact that that what really impairs fun is the more interesting. I think we're naturally fun creatures, and what impairs fun is the more interesting question, and boredom is the fun killer of them all.
Mm-hmm, right. Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. Yeah, boredom, the buzzkill, the fun killer. It's kind of the flip side of fun. So there was something else that happened, and I'm not sure. Wait, let me rephrase. Let me think what I say. Something else more personal that happened.
I forget who I am right now.
Yeah. You're Albert Nirenberg's doppelganger. So we could shift gears and do a different interview. No, I'm thinking when you lost your iPhone, but maybe that was, that really happen?
That is true. Okay. Yes. This is the story as clearly as I can tell, which is that as I'm doing a series on the science of fun, I actually, one day I go sledding with my daughter and I lose my iPhone. And for 48 hours, I don't have my iPhone, which is not an unusual experience, but I'm really struck by how bored I am, particularly in, you know, bank lineups or on the subway. And I have an acute experience of boredom and start thinking, wow, there's something more here. Partly, why is it caused by losing the iPhone, but also, what is boredom really? Because it felt unbearable.
Mm, yeah, and you've identified three universal laws of boredom.
Yes.
Sorry. What are they?
Okay. Well. First of all, it can be fairly simplified. These are the simple laws of boredom because you can get more complicated. The first law is that boredom is produced by your environment. If you're in an interesting place, you will generally not be bored. But if your environment is boring, is lack of stimulation, so creating an environment that is boring is often the first stage or first stage of boredom. The second huge factor is repetition. And what I didn't know until I did the research was there's a very good reason why we hate repetition, which is that, you know, in the natural environment, it wouldn't happen that much. You wouldn't have things happening over and over and over and over again the way they might, let's say, in a factory. Mm-hmm. So our brains really resist and actually look away from things that repeat, and we are more interested in exceptions, for example. So when things repeat too much, so when people repeat themselves or an action repeats, we tend to find it boring. This is built into the wiring of our brains, apparently. And then the third one is vigilance, which is if you are in a boring environment and you are forced to participate in or watch something repetitive, and you are required, let's say, by your job to be attentive to that repetitive thing in a boring environment, you get a more acute form of boredom. So that would be, for example, driving in a car is kind of like that, because you might be driving across a boring landscape where there are repetitive features that never change, such as expressways. Mm-hmm. And because you can't mess around while you're driving and you need to pay attention, then the vigilance of your experience makes things even more boring.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of trifecta of boredom.
Yeah. Also, something like another example would be filling out forms. If you have to fill, that's one of my things. I can't stand filling out forms.
See, Exactly. And I've always been trying to figure out why we hate doing our taxes so much. And doing our taxes, because taxes is filling out forms, and it requires vigilance, because you know that you're not supposed to make mistakes. And that those two things, like if it doesn't matter what you say on the form, it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have to be fussy and accurate, it tends to be boring.
Exactly. For sure. Boredom is something we all experience at one time or another, yet there hasn't been much research done on it. Why do you think that is?
Okay, that's a good question. I would say, is it possible that the institutions that generally do research on subjects have a vested interest in people not knowing too much about boredom or understanding it? So for example, what I'm saying is that the great purveyors of boredom in our society are, I would say, our industrial culture and our educational institutions. The educational institutions have more of a tension around them because they're supposed to be interesting, but they're often very boring. Well, a bolt factory probably does not pretend to be educational nor interesting. So my answer to that would be, it's very possible that our universities, which might do research on the nature and science of boredom, have an acute, or not acute, but a direct interest in not delving too deep, because they themselves are great purveyors of boredom.
Mm-hmm. You make the case in your film that compulsory education starting in grade school is actually an unintentional boring machine, a place that manufactures boredom. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah. Well, there's some dispute about that, because some people said, well, really, do you mean unintentional or intentional? And I believe it's unintentional, but some people believe that the educational system, especially the American system, is an intentional boring machine, in that it has all those qualities I described. One, an unstimulating environment. Two, learning by repetition. They believe that, you know, the same exercise done many times helps people learn. And third, vigilance, which is tests. That's all tests are about.
Yeah.
Did you pay attention? Did you remember things? So it is the exact formula for what creates acute boredom. And I guess the debate is it on purpose? Is it by accident? What the film says, boredom, what the film says, which I think is fresh, is that what is tragic in our system is that people quickly assume that the problem is the teaching. It's the subject material. It is the things that are taught. And the twist in the film is that I believe that as long as you have a sedentary culture, meaning everyone's just sitting around, then you get boredom. That, in fact, it doesn't matter if you had the most interesting, possibly the most interesting class or subject or curriculum, that if everyone is sitting and sedentary all day long, you get boredom. That's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm. And you actually talked to an anti-sitting activist. So you believe that sitting down for the extended periods of time, as we do in school, that causes boredom?
Well, see, this is the interesting thing, is that I was struck by something that happened to me in school when I remember having, like we all did, you know, most of my teachers were not so great, but once in a while I had a great teacher. And I remember being struck by this feeling of betrayal, which is the teacher would be teaching a very interesting class and, you know, obviously had worked hard preparing it. And I would find myself literally nodding off or acting in a way that signaled that I was bored, when in fact I probably wasn't. Well, I wasn't intellectually bored. And I later decoded this and figured out a possible explanation. Neuroscience suggests that when you stop moving, you have a part of your brain, the cerebellum, that really is only or is particularly active and particularly coordinated around movement. So when you stop moving, such as sitting in a classroom, what's important to understand is the original classrooms, as they were developed in Europe, the entire idea was to stop moving. People were told to sit in desks, which confined your movement, mm-hmm. to place their hands on the top of the desk and stop moving entirely. At that moment, when you stop moving, your cerebellum, in effect, switches off. You have no cerebellum. And because the cerebellum is so central to brain activity that the rest of the brain sort of has a hard time getting through attention and everything else. Consequently, whether you like it or not, if you are not moving, you often have a hard time paying attention. So in this case, I tragically, in my view, began to, you know, indicate to my teachers that I was bored when I wasn't actually. I was just in a sedentary state that caused me to move into the physiological boredom state. And my point would be, even if kids go to school like Ernest, desperately trying to pay attention, if you stop them from moving, and this particularly, you know, is more obvious in cultures where there's a tradition, let's say, of movement, as the best way of explaining it, if you stop the kids from moving, they will inevitably be bored, and it doesn't matter how many times you change the curriculum. That is the challenge, I believe, of revolutionizing our disastrous education system.
Mm-hmm. And you even in the film make the claim or say that new science, you talk about what new science has discovered about sedentary culture as in terms of the damage it can cause, the illnesses. Can you talk a bit about that?
Okay. Yeah. Well, this is this, and other people are saying this, but when you add it up, it is shocking. You know, I think the Mayo Institute put it all together, but basically they're tying chronic sedentary behavior to 35 chronic illnesses, including heart disease, diabetes, obesity, obviously, depression. It's all tied to the obsession with sedentary behavior, which actually, this is the key thing, starts in school. You know, it's true that computers do it to us. It's true that television does it to us, but it is the school system, which essentially trains kids to be sedentary. I can say categorically, without exaggeration, that probably the number one health threat to children is the education system.
Wow.
It's the system that trains people to be sedentary blobs, which, as the Mayo Institute has indicated, is the source of 35 chronic illnesses.
And cancer, too, right?
Yeah. I mean, sedentary behavior is a killer.
Wow.
It's a killer all around. And there's new research that shows even when you compensate, this is the scary part. Let's say you're sedentary for 8 hours a day because you're at school or at work. You compensate by going to the gym and working out. Apparently, it doesn't undo the damage that you did by sitting around.
Wow.
So it's scary stuff.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I'm sitting right now.
I was going to say, because you do this in the film, too. I was going to say, so should we stand up to do the rest of this interview? For all you know, maybe I've been standing up the whole time.
I hope so.
But that will involve changing mic positions and things. But, yeah.
I'm gesticulating a lot. I'm actually moving around a lot. I hope that helps.
Oh, yeah, it definitely does. So I'm just out of order in my questions here. So let me bounce back to...
I was going to mention one thing, which is sort of the key, I would say, what's new in this film that people should hopefully notice is that the film tries to challenge the conventional view of what boredom is. And the conventional view is that it's a trivial nuisance. Nobody really likes it. It's annoying. Nobody's for boredom, allegedly. Nobody really likes it. But it's not harmful. That's not true. That the new evidence, and this is, it's interesting how they sort of put it all together. Basically, you know, a bunch of scientists were doing MRI scans of people's brains, and I guess they, created situations that bored them. And they noticed that, contrary to what you might expect, you'd think that when bored people, when you look at them, they look sleepy. You think, oh, they're slowing down. And so MRI scans the people that scanned these people's brains were shocked to discover that quite the opposite was taking place. Their brains were actually speeding up the moment they became bored.
Wow.
That was the first sort of weird thing. The second thing was a study at the University of Waterloo did very elaborate tests where they made very boring. It was interesting to see that the professors got together and constructed very boring films. And one of them, the one that was most, they had a guy mowing his lawn for quite a few hours. And what was weird was that they found out that was not effective, that to their surprise, people were kind of fascinated by watching a guy mowing his lawn. So then they switched and they found something that truly was boring, which was people putting up laundry. apparently, yeah. Just about everybody finds that boring within about 20, 30 seconds. So that they did this test based on people watching a movie with people putting up laundry, and they came to a fairly shocking result that at this sort of pivotal moment, as people tune out and get bored, their cortisol levels jump, which is the stress hormone. And their heartbeat accelerates. The heartbeat acceleration is minor, but it's probably interesting. But it's the cortisol jump, which is intriguing, and that absolutely makes sense. What it's basically saying is that boredom is not a trivial, annoying, superficial state. It's actually a hidden state of stress.
Wow.
And over time, it may be a hidden state of major stress. There's some evidence that that being bored chronically will increase your risk of dying young.
Wow.
Or younger. So it may be a significant state of stress.
So we can actually die of boredom. There's that old expression, I was bored to death. That can actually, in some cases, be true.
According to a British study, absolutely true. That the only thing is that this study was done, it's one of these mass studies where they took thousands of people and then they did the data afterwards, I think after some of the people may have been dead. So basically it was a study of civil servants, a statistical study where one of the questions happened to be, are you bored in your life? If the people answered yes to that question, they then looked at their mortality rate. And they discovered that there was a shocking difference in the mortality rate for people who reported that they were bored and people who didn't. And it was significant enough to say in this case, but what I'm saying is it doesn't stand up to, let's say, the kind of science you might want in this situation where you would go and revisit these people and find out if that really was the factor.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, a study of thousands of British civil servants suggested that people who reported that they were bored died earlier than people who didn't.
Yeah, so good reason to stay out of a career, don't pursue a career in civil service, which is hard to do these days anyway because they're cutting back. But did you experience stress when you were bored?
Absolutely. I think that when I started, of course I was looking for it, but I started to notice that feeling I had, and this is the interesting thing about the laundry video that they showed us, was that I thought, because, you know, I'm making a film about it, I'm so interested in the subject, I thought, you know, it's not going to be boring, but the fascinating thing was the same thing that happened to me, that happened to the subjects happened to me, which is that within about 20 seconds of watching people putting up laundry, I found myself drifting off. And then when I realized there wasn't anything else that I could really pay attention to, I started to feel this sort of nervous, anxious feeling. I became aware of what I thought was my blood pressure perhaps increasing. And this is what bored people typically report, that it's an unpleasant, aggravating feeling. And I think it's also damaging to integrity. That's one of the things that is interesting about boredom. It's sort of soul destroying, because if you kind of have a plan about what you want to do and what you want to be and what you want to react to in that environment, if you start getting bored, kind of everything goes out the window. And that's something that we know very well in addiction research, because one of the key factors in a relapse with people that have addictions is boredom.
Mm.
And it's interesting why, because a lot of people will have, you know, they have a very earnest plan. I know I shouldn't drink or I shouldn't do drugs. They've worked on it. They're very strong about it. But what happens is that if they find themselves sitting around with no plans, not knowing what to do, the boredom eats away at their souls. And if that goes on for too long, they will do things that they never thought they would do.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, and you have those clips from people at a recovery center saying that exact same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You argue that we can view the economy as a pyramid of boredom. How so?
Yes. I would say that if you look at, I mean, famously, it's never really explained this way, but I would say that they're the echelons of careers and status in the job market is about avoiding boredom. The worst jobs, let's say like street sweeper or floor or janitor, I'm not saying these are always necessarily the worst jobs, but they are seen as tedious. IT guy sometimes is seen as tedious too.
Mm-hmm.
So these or call center operators, these very tedious jobs are generally the worst paid and the lowest status. And as you go up the pyramid, you have more self-control. You might have more fun. Now, it's not always true, because some people have pointed out, you know, that banking is very prestigious, and you might have a lot of self-control, but it can also be boring. But it's usually counteracted by the fact that the money is coming in so quickly that that itself is a stimulant.
Yeah.
But generally you have a clear hierarchy that the lowest jobs are more boring and the better paid jobs are more interesting, and you avoid boredom by you know being promoted up the ranks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You also see protests and riots and protests like the Occupy movement as anti-boredom movements.
I would say right now there's an aggressive, one of the roles of the education system, and this is not me who's pointed this out, is to habituate. I think that naturally human beings are extremely curious, playful, energetic creatures. And we are actually not well acclimatized to the industrial. If you look at the rise of boredom, there's an exact correlation between even the very invention of the term boredom, which is quite recent. It first appeared in a novel by Charles Dickens, so it's not very
Bleak
long
House,
ago.
Right?
Bleak House, exactly. Yeah. So there wasn't even a word for it. I mean, people used to use the French word ennui, but it doesn't quite mean the same thing. And so the invention of boredom correlates exactly with the rise of industrial culture, you know, assembly lines, factories, bolts, long trips, farm work, et cetera. It's not that there wasn't drudgery before, but I think that drudgery was more adventurous, like living in, you know, eking out a living in the jungle had plenty of adventures and ups and downs. So by nature, we're a very, very energetic, curious, maybe brilliant creature. And one role of the education system is to habituate people to boring, repetitive behavior and work. So you essentially are trained by the boring education system to get used to the idea of a boring job. And that is possibly why people are so troubled by the sort of other side of themselves, which is that at night or at the club or at the party, people that often have very boring lives will switch to the other extreme and will end up, you know, all night benders doing unbelievable things that they never thought they would do. And I think that in itself brings us back to boredom. Mm-hmm. There's still a culture of boredom.
Yeah. There's something else interesting that comes out in your film. Sandy Mann, a professor of psychology at the University of Central Lancashire that you talked to, she talked about we're more bored than ever before. We have more things to entertain us than ever before. And that's the paradox. And that kind of ties in with the boredom you experienced when you lost your iPhone, doesn't it?
Exactly. So her claim and I agree is that we're living in a time right now where officially Apple computer would tell us that they have helped destroy boredom, because now next time you're in a bank lineup or any kind of lineup, you can whip out your iPhone and you can get on Facebook and text people and, you know, or look up some information, whatever you might do. And I actually think that's true and that is good. I think it's good that you can do that. What is scary is that computer screens, again, the neuroscience is, in this case, is what makes things intriguing, because you kind of have this feeling, but you can't really understand it until you look a little deeper at the science. What they discovered, and I found this is amazing, is that screens by their very nature, and I'm talking about iPhone screens, computer screens, iPad screens, that kind of thing, and even movie screens or the outdoor screens you see in Times Square, those screens, because of their flashing, bright nature, they actually hack into the part of our brain that looks for fascinating things, like, for example, water sources. Water in the distance flickers, and it may explain why we are fascinated by diamonds. Diamonds are look like flickering water. And to a certain extent, that's what screens do too. They kind of flicker. They also, in a sense, create a sense of novelty. Because we know that the screen has the ability to change and morph into other things, when we look at a screen, we think there's always something new going on. So it doesn't matter that you might be looking at the same old Facebook page or the same old website, but your brain is fooled into thinking something new is always happening on the screen. And that's why people can sit sometimes at a computer and 6 hours will go by and they will not realize that all that time went by and they really weren't doing anything. Pull the camera back and there's a guy sitting in his underpants. Mm-hmm. That is, you know, the conclusion of this film, Boredom, is that is America today. America today is a guy or a woman sitting in front of a computer feeling like he's had a vast range of new, intriguing, novel experiences as he, you know, whips through the the internet. Pull back, and what you really see is a guy who's probably slightly obese sitting in his underpants. That's America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a sad comment. Yeah.
By the way, I'm not in my underpants right now.
Okay, good. Well, yeah, then, yeah, plus you're not American. I'm Canadian as well, so, and I'm here down in America, but I am not in my underpants. I'm quite well dressed, I must say, especially for radio.
By the way, this is, I don't mean to pick on America. I would say just as it's Canada too. It's everywhere in the industrialized world. It's not. It's just that America's emblematic of everything. So we might as well make it emblematic of this phenomenon too.
Oh sure, yeah, that makes sense. Have you discovered a cure for boredom?
I think I think there are of course multiple cures, but I think part of it is there's some very interesting things. Like, you know, this research that shows this sort of blew my mind. It seems like a superficial study. Initially, but when you think about it, it's a sort of brilliant study. I can't remember exactly who did it, but basically they found out that you shouldn't do anything for longer than 90 minutes. So if you're sitting at a computer and you realize you've been there like 2 hours, it's time to get up and do something else. Now, I'm not saying, like, what people often feel is like they're like, buddy, you don't understand. I have a lot of work to do. I got to stay at my computer. Yes. But what the point is that after 90 minutes, you actually are far less effective. You're generally not enjoying yourself, and you're not really actually getting the job done. So it's a good idea to go outside, have a walk, maybe do some exercise.
Yeah, get out of that chair. Get out of that chair, the sedentary culture.
Stand up, you.
Yeah.
We're talking to you.
Yeah.
Stand up.
Yeah.
And go outside. And that is really an effective cure that one of the side effects of our screen sedentary culture is we mistakenly think that real experience is kind of boring, but it really is not. And you don't get tired of it if you can organize good ones. You know, you never get tired of a nice walk in a nice park if you really think about it. And
you shouldn't do that for 90 minutes either, right? You shouldn't go for a walk in the park for more than 90 minutes.
You basically shouldn't do anything for longer than 90 minutes if you expect to achieve in that environment. And that's kind of one of the solutions for boredom. I mean, in terms of class time, they're finding out that the average attention span is only best for about 22 minutes. So, but that kind of makes sense. Classes should maybe be 22 minutes long. People would find that interesting. You would not get bored, mostly, if you were able to stand up once in a while and your classes were 22 minutes long.
Sure, be easier to focus. Yeah. Do you think that we can ever eliminate boredom in our lifetime, or are we stuck with it?
No, we actually don't want to eliminate boredom because there's a whole other side, and you and I have actually carefully ignored this whole other side. There's a very positive side to boredom. There's some people, philosophers, who've made the case that we would still be cavemen if we were not bored. One of the things that makes us different from maybe other animals is that they are less bored than we are. We get bored very quickly, so we start experimenting with stuff. We think about better ways to do things. We want to be somebody else. That's good. There's nothing wrong with that. And in fact, that may be one of the drivers of civilization. Now, what I've realized making this film is that not only is the word boredom like a fresh new concept, that even the word boredom does not well define the different kinds of boredom that are out there. Philosophical boredom, I might argue, is kind of harmless, meaning the feeling that you should do something with your life or with your existence is not a bad thing.
Right.
Chronic industrial boredom that you might experience working at a boring job or sitting in a classroom with a dreary teacher, that's something else. That, I think, should be questioned and in some cases, you know, should be made illegal. I think there's some teachers and professors that should be jailed for bore crimes.
bore crime tribunals. Yes. Yeah, there's a whole industry here.
If anybody wants to set up a bore crime tribunal, I'm there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you got to get they got to pay you royalties.
That's
right. You've got to be involved because this is something you've coined. That's excellent. Yeah.